For November 16th, 2018, we talk about the Detective Pikachu trailer, Goetia, and we ask you to write personal ads for game characters. Welcome to Level 264. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendez.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We may or may not have Dennis joining us here a little bit later. It just got to be far enough after the starting time that we decided to embark. So who knows if he is running after the bus as we speak. Don't know.
Could be a surprise Dennis.
he'll just pop in. Oh man, I'm in this crazy valley right now. Like, so for most of the year, no birthdays, and then for the first 3 weeks of November, all birthdays.
The Valentine rush.
Yes. I went
That's pretty great.
I went to the Drug Mart by my house to buy cards, right? And, you know, I was like, I walked up, I won't say how many cards, I won't say for who, I'm not going to blow up anybody's spot, but 80% of my birthdays fall within this period. And I said, like, yeah, I just have a lot of birthdays. And the person on the other side, they had the gall to say, oh yeah, Valentine's Day, which is to say a lot of your relatives' parents really like to fuck around this time of year 9 months ago. Ben, when you say it, it's fine because you know me, it's good. But this other person,
they're my birthday is also exactly 9 months after Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I know, by the way, your birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a thing.
Yeah.
So what are you doing, bro?
Don't do anything for my birthday. I am incidentally going to trivia tomorrow night, so that will be my birthday party.
Fun. Yeah.
And then Jeremy's birthday's tomorrow, dude.
Whoa. Ooh.
So, like, yeah, there's all kinds of birthdays going on and stuff.
It's a bunch.
And then, of course, there's Cole's birthday next week.
Yeah, yeah. We can talk about it next week, though.
So maybe this is weird, but I always do the math when, like, or like when people talk about, like, when their birthday is or whatever. I always, like, if I have, like, a side moment or so, I'll just think of, like, the 9 months before and be like, wonder if there's, like, a holiday before that or something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
I've memorized the dates of all famous blackouts in the United States.
Oh, really?
No, I haven't done that. I'm sorry. I'm a liar. That'd be a fucked up thing to do, wouldn't it?
Memorize the blackouts?
Yeah.
I don't know. You could be a blackout enthusiast.
Yeah, it's true.
Independent of the other thing.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, like bar trivia is good. I'm just going to go like get a meal with my family on my birthday. Like, I don't... Mm-hmm. You know, but parties or anything. I think you guys broke me on my 23rd birthday is the thing.
Just never trusted anyone to have a birthday party with you again in fear of being iced.
Exactly. Yeah. I just lock myself away like it's the purge. And just the shutters go down. Yeah.
Just wear eye blinders wherever you go.
Oh, man. That party, which will live in infamy. Jala, how are you?
Well, since the last time I was on here, I did the Spartan Ultra, which is 30 plus miles of mud, hills, and loose rocks, plus 60 plus obstacles. So I did that thing. And I said it was that many miles of mud because it had rained right before the event happened. So the mud or the ground was really soft. And then you get thousands, literally thousands of people running on the ground. And then you've got very, very thick mud. Now in the morning, that's okay because it was wet mud still, which meant that you could like, you know, trudge through it and you'd only have to worry about slipping. Well, in the afternoon, when the sun came out and started to quasi dry it up, it
gets gummy.
Then it turned into gummy kind of clay that was trying to suck your shoe off your foot. Mm. And also you could slip. So you've got multiple issues to deal with doing your trek.
Break your ankle doing that.
You could. There was somebody life flatted out. So I'm pretty sure because there was mud on the hills with the loose rocks. And so like, I'm pretty sure somebody slid or busted rolling down that hill or something. Now me on the downhill, like I can totally, you know, mountain goat my way up any of the uphills and that's fine. But on the downhill, I was like, I'm not about to bust it. My shoes had very little tread left on them because they got worn down by all the rocks. And so I just like put myself on my heels and my palms because I had some gloves on, and I like crab crawled down the hill because it was too steep. And when I was doing that, the loose rocks started to slide under me, so I was just like coasting down the hill. So that was a thing that happened.
Yeah,
but I did not bust my ass, and I came back unscathed, and it was nowhere near as hard as the Wildflower 50K that I did, where I got dehydrated and was totally alone. So you know, I can't complain about that. But also, this last Sunday, I did a Veterans Day rucking event, and my ruck club went to give donations to homeless veterans for U.S. Vets, which is a local charity organization. Cool. So it was really nice to be able to do that. But we ended up having an issue in the middle of it where we went to this one location, and then like nobody was there. So they called around and caught a hold of the people at US Vets. And then they're like, oh, no, you're supposed to come to this other location, which was several miles away. And we had like one person had a dog and a bunch of people had little kids. So it wasn't like just all adults and we could just ruck over there and no big deal. It was actually a pretty big deal. So then we ended up having to use the light rail system to get over there and go drop off everything for that event. So it ended up taking quite a bit longer than anticipated. So, and I also did a painting restoration job the day before. I've been teaching Camp Gladiator and all this other stuff. So when I was talking to some of my buddies during the event, one of them was like listening to me, and he's like, how many jobs do you have? And I counted them off on my hand, and I have five. So five different jobs. I got one main job, and then I've got five side hustles. So then he's like, you're Jamaican. And I just like bust out laughing so bad because I was drinking water at the time, and I almost spit it out because it was just really funny because,
I don't get you're Jamaican.
Well, that's because you haven't been around. Like if you have ever been in some place like South Florida or something, it's something that I would understand because I've lived around, you know, people from the Caribbean. So it was really funny to me. But anyway, so yeah, it was a pretty entertaining time. But yeah, so but we did get the donations over to all the people who really needed it, which was really awesome. And I have to give shout outs to my family for donating. It was almost all my family. And then also Greg. So Greg or Soul Blazer, he also gave a donation. So thank you very much for that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds Oh, hey, Dennis! Welcome.
Surprise!
Hey,
Dennis.
What's up?
Yeah,
we're surprise, Dennis.
Yeah, we're still in the banter. I need to check and see which track you're on.
I'm Ben invited me to the call. If that's any help.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
And sorry, so, I would have hopped on earlier had I known. Oh. I was under the assumption of 8:30. So.
Oh, oops. Sorry.
That's all good.
Why were you under that assumption?
It's been our time forever, hasn't it?
No.
No.
Curious.
Yeah, it's been 8 for a while. Well, we can talk logistics afterwards.
Yeah.
How are you doing, man? We're still in the banter portion of the show.
Good. Well, I joined just in time.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing well. I think since we last talked, we have started potty training for Milo.
Okay.
That's been an adventure. He's ready for it though. He's been much easier than Luke has, but an adventure nonetheless.
Is it the case that because he is the younger one, he has the role model to look up to? Like it seems more realistic because he has seen Luke perform this miracle.
It can be done. I've seen it done. Yeah, no, that's that he can watch Luke do it and kind of is familiar with it from that perspective. He also has a cheerleader because Luke has gone full blown back into like every time Milo pees, Luke is like over the moon and so excited, mostly because he gets to flush a toilet because Milo is not strong enough to pull down the handle on his own.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Luke has a role to play and is thus a great encourager.
Yeah. I remember being a little kid and just being enchanted by the idea of levers and buttons.
Yeah.
It's
loud. It's wet. There's bodily fluids involved. Like, there's nothing not to love. From
little kid heaven.
Yeah. So, you know, that's been an adventure. There's been a couple gruesome potty mistakes that we've worked through, but otherwise pretty good. That's really the only large thing. I had a big project delayed this year, which freed up some time, which is nice. So I can be here with you lovely people.
Fantastic.
Ooh.
Well, it's cool having you here. Ben, I haven't heard from you. I mean, other than your trivia plans.
Yeah. I guess the latest news is my dad was visiting Overtown over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So I was an Austin tourist once again. So I got to take him around to basically my favorite spots, which is nice for me. So I get to go to my favorite spots. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a good time. His birthday is a week before mine, so we scheduled the visit in between our two birthdays. So
that's good.
That was also fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always nice when you can combine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I really don't have an awful lot going on. I think I started by talking about the birthday alley, and that's very much what's going on right now.
Can you talk about your possible cat?
I don't want to. So I can leave this in. I don't want to get people's hopes up until I seal the deal.
Okay.
I've shared pictures of the likely candidate though.
Okay.
And her nightmare eyes. So hopefully, hopefully things work out. And if they
that
do,
can be my nightmare. Yeah.
Dennis, you commented on the eyes. Everybody that I show the picture to comments on the eyes.
Yeah, those are some like model-esque. I think I said anime level eyes. Like, you know, cat eyes are a thing already, but even within that reference, those eyes are like top 90%. I think.
Yes. So
I was going to say they're turned up to 11. But, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't the top 90% not that good?
90th percentile.
There we go.
Yeah. So if it works out, hopefully it works out. I shared the picture during a Hex Crank stream. You know, it's because I was talking about it there too. So hopefully next week you'll be
deal,
hearing.
Cole.
What's that?
Seal the deal.
Yeah, I'm just afraid that. So I went and saw her on Friday last week, and then. You know, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go back, and I've just been checking the website trying to see if she was adopted since then. She hasn't been, so I just want to go and spend more time with her, and then I've got stuff to I need to pick up because cats need things, and most animals need things is the thing. So,
it really the thing?
It's one of the things.
Thankfully, cats need less things than most other animals. They're pretty, you know, set it and forget it.
Yeah, but you gotta
pet it and forget it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I gotta get a box for it to poop in. I need to get it poop sand. There's a bunch of stuff like that.
You just have to talk about poop. There's just like this whole banter is really about poop, isn't
it? Yeah, lots of poop. And you were talking about the mud when you were rucking. It's a real we need help. We'll pull up. We need to pull up, everybody. Well, that sounds like banter to me. How do you all feel about getting started?
Let's do this.
Okay. We've got the usual show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
The brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let us see. I've got one that can be real short, and I don't know that we have too much to say about it. Obsidian, the developer of Fallout New Vegas, most notably, but also recently, been putting out a lot of Kickstarter-funded RPG projects, Wasteland 2, putting out Pillars of Eternity, Tyranny, etc. Well, they were just, it looks like today, no, it was a little bit ago, fuck me, just recently purchased by Microsoft. So this is one of several studios that Microsoft has purchased. They had a big block at their E3 about buying different studios. I believe that they bought the team that did A Way Out and Brothers. I believe that
oh, wow.
Yeah, I also believe that they bought Ninja Theory as well.
Oh, cool. I knew about that one, and I knew they bought the people who did We Happy Few and another indie game you'd recognize.
Yeah. No, so they have gobbled up Obsidian as well. They're saying that Obsidian will continue to operate autonomously. Who knows, though? This probably wouldn't change too much about their game availability, just because most of their stuff was PC leading anyway. So what do we think of this?
I'm always scared when a company says, like, oh, we're not going to change anything at all. It's like, usually that means they're not going to change anything for, like, the first, like, 3 to 5 years.
Right. and then it's going to go nuts. We've all seen Wayne's World, you know, like,
we're not going to change anything at all, but you guys can do everything on 90% less budget, right?
Right.
Okay. So Microsoft buying a studio it's easy for me to envision the negative impact, which is, you know, available on a smaller series of platforms. Although, like you said, Obsidian was kind of PC forward anyway. It's hard for me to quantify exactly what kind of like resources or whatever this means for Obsidian. Like, how does this? I guess I don't have a good mental image for how this means potentially better games from the developer.
I have no idea.
I mean, it means more stability for the game company, probably, since they have people who back them. So even if they make like a shitty game, that doesn't mean they have to close down.
That's true.
So more, higher probability for a shitty game, I'm hearing.
They have a safety net now.
Yeah. Although, maybe this is just my independent streak, I would much rather have my studio solvency be determined by my relationship with the players directly who are funding my stuff than to be at the mercy of, you know, somebody's P&L up in Seattle, right?
So then it's kind of interesting of why they sold themselves to Microsoft in the first place.
I don't know.
Well, you're assuming it was entirely voluntary. Like, I don't know if they were getting in a place where it's like, all right, we're kind of screwed unless we find a sugar daddy.
Yeah, it's been a good run. Yeah.
Well, but you know, I like the idea that a you know, being under Microsoft allows them to experiment more and take more risks on things that might not work. Like that's good in concept. However, I feel like that the reality is going to be, hey, you've got profit goals now, and you are accountable to Big Brother over your shoulder.
Yeah.
So let's make sure we hit those numbers. Let's make sure we sand off any rough edges.
Yeah.
And make sure this fits as well into our blah gamer segment demographic as possible.
The other side might be that, you know, prior to this relatively productive period over the past, let's say, 5 years, prior to that, Obsidian mostly spent a lot of time working under other studios. I mean, like, they're literally their start was picking up IP like Star Wars, the Knights of the Old Republic, and Neverwinter Nights, and, you know, developing
Fallout and Vegas.
Exactly. Dungeon Siege, which, or, you know, 3, which, like, that's a bad franchise, but my understanding was that was a good game. They kind of have experience working under other teams or with other stuff that have interest in kind of like keeping a firm hand on their output and still putting out good stuff. Right. So I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe. Weird. But yeah, they've had a really good, wow. I said they did Wasteland. I was totally, that's not the case. They didn't do that. Why did I lump them in?
Fallout New Vegas. Because the image looks a lot like Wasteland.
Yeah, that's true. Who did Wasteland 2? Okay, I need to get to the bottom. I know that Chris Avellone is like he gets his hands into everything, but now I'm curious. I don't know. Oh well. Oh, that was In Exile that did that did Wasteland 2.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh wait, I think I saw a headline that they just got bought too.
What?
Hold on. INXILE, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see.
If they were bought too, that's really weird.
They were bought by Microsoft as well.
Cool. doing a clean sweep. Yeah.
And wait a second, guys. Hold on. As I'm starting to Google developer names here, I can't find a single one that wasn't just bought by Microsoft.
All of
what
them?
Is happening? Every single one.
Wow. Yeah, no, but In Exile did Wasteland 2, Torment Tides of Numenera, Bard's Tale, stuff like that. So
yeah.
Huh. Weird. That's my story. Jala, I see something about a bionic arm.
Yeah. So there's a UK gamer named Daniel Melville, and he was born without a right hand, and now he wears a 3D printed copy of the arm worn by Adam Jensen in Deus Ex.
And he did ask for that.
Yeah, he did. He grew up. He grew up with a prosthetic arm, but he always wanted a bionic one, and he ended up in touch with the founder of Open Bionics, which is a company that develops low-cost bionic hands, mm-hmm. and ended up becoming a tester of the first 3D-printed multi-grip bionic hand and arm. And it uses pulses from when he tenses the muscles in his arm to open and close the hand, and he can pick up things with his finger and thumb, which he couldn't do before with just the prosthetic. He doesn't have individual finger movement yet, but they are working on it. Mm-hmm. And he apparently is in the Guinness Book of World Records for first prosthetic limb based on a video game, because they have to parse every last thing to put it in right. there. But anyway, he plays games on PC, including Overwatch, which he is a big fan of. And he can't use a controller because the thumb isn't as mobile as an actual thumb. Mm-hmm. So the PC is a little bit easier. But anyway, he now develops his own bionic arms and holds workshops on 3D printing for kids and families. And he believes that it will be a couple of years before esport players with disabilities are able to fully compete against those without disabilities. But that day is coming. And so this was just kind of like another one of those interesting stories, at least for me, you know, of how, you know, not that the gaming itself has brought, you know, brought anything to the bionic arm development, but that is definitely one of the ways that he tests it is through playing video games. And this is kind of like tangentially related to video games, but it's kind of cool. And also his arm looks like the Deus Ex arm. So,
you know, I'm a sucker for any kind of accessibility story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of exciting, though, because, you know, with a lot of people working on it to get all that full mobility in those bionic arms and to make them cheap, thanks to free 3D printing, it will be something that eventually disabled players will be able to compete, you know, equally. And that'll be awesome.
There are a lot of ways that we live in the shittiest version of a cyberpunk future, but like the presence of robotic arms that work. Have any of you seen one of these in person?
No.
Not in person, no.
No? I knew somebody, I worked with somebody who had one of these. He switched from a prosthetic to kind of a fully mechanized electronic one in the time that I knew him. And it was just astounding to see like he just how much mobility he had with it and all the stuff that he could do. Although there was
punching
a
punching through walls.
Choking out coworkers.
There's a hilarious moment, and I'm not giving identifying information, so it's fine. And he laughed about it too, where he went to pick up a can of soda water, and it he squeezed it too strong, and it popped.
Huh.
It was just a.
How do you not just feel like a badass at that point?
That was the thing. It was a calibration error, but it was just amazing to see the way that this thing worked and like just improved his life and reduced pain. You know, the pain of a bad prosthetic that he was working with. It was real cool.
Yeah.
This owns.
Yeah. I want to talk to the designer who did the, you know, original video game version of this hand and just get his reaction to be like, this thing has taken on a life of its own and is in the real world in a way that you like never could have imagined in your wildest dreams.
Yeah. Like
this has got to be every designer's like complete fantasy.
Well, and then too, you know, the guy with the prosthetic also said in the article that, you know, he really identified with the character because, hey, this guy also doesn't have an arm, but he can switch out his arms and do all this other stuff. And that's really cool. And I want to be like that guy sometime.
Yeah.
Shit, now you're going to make us and talk now about Devil May Cry.
Oh, so. Badass.
Mm-hmm.
Into it. Let's see here. Dennis. What's this Pikachu monstrosity that I see on my screen right now?
Yes, this abomination to mankind.
This is some like Christopher Robin.
Ryan Reynolds. With Ryan Reynolds' voice, no less.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
First off, I had no idea that this was coming.
No, me either.
I had no idea that this was a thing. Like, I think I saw headlines about Detective Pikachu, but nowhere as did a game. I pick up that this was live action. Yeah.
The biggest story that revolved around this movie, because the Detective Pikachu game has been a thing in Japan for a while. They brought it to America. The biggest story about the movie being in development was there was a huge online presence, like a petition to have Danny DeVito voice Detective Pikachu. Yeah, I don't normally go in web petitions, but that would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I watched the trailer and I cannot stop thinking about the movie Ted. Did anyone see that?
That's the Seth MacFarlane and Mark Wahlberg comedy movie about the grown-up teddy bear.
Teddy bear comes to life to delight a kid with no friends, but then kind of sticks around into adulthood.
Like strippers, yeah.
And this trailer wants so badly to be that. Hmm. And the parts of the trailer that I was amused by and that I laughed at were that. This furry person being way more cynical and asinine than I ever imagined a Pokemon could be. So the scene where, so apparently the plot is like the main human character can somehow understand Pokemon, who, you know, up to this point have only spoken in Pika Pikas, but he can understand them just as if he's talking in real life, but no one else can. And so there's a scene around like them figuring that out. And then, you know, Pikachu promptly talking shit to people. and then confirming, you know, you're sure they can't understand me, right?
Yeah.
And then another one where they're trying to do a good cop, bad cop with a what is that? A mime?
Mr. Mime. Mr. Mime.
That's right. No, they show a Mr. Mime.
They show Mr. Mime features prominently in the trailer. It was probably my favorite scene, but it's like I just want the Pokemon movie that leans full bore into that. Like, I want a Ted level of humor in this movie, and I know it can't be that because it's a Pokemon movie.
I mean, can't we just get like, can we skip over Ted and just do Paul, that that movie with Simon Pegg and the alien? That'd be good.
now you gotta send me googling. I don't remember that one.
It was an Edgar Wright movie. Seth Rogen voiced the alien, and it was Simon Pegg.
Hot on the heels of Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize the importance of a director.
Yeah. Wait, what was that? No, it was directed by somebody else. No, but it had Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. So you can forgive my confusion.
Yeah. But it's just, I think the trailer really is aware of the audience that it's playing to, the people who are going to be deciding to buy tickets for the kids.
Yes.
Who have fond memories of their own. And just, it has that, and it's just a trailer. So, you know, I could be eating my words in a little bit, but it has that like original Shrek level of wink smile to it.
Right.
That really hits a sweet spot. And like I said, I wish they could lean all the way into it. I know they can't, but for as far as they can push it, I think they did a great job with the trailer at least.
Yeah. You gone back and watched Shrek recently. It's basically smut.
Yes.
It's like family, not Family Feud. Is that the one? Family Feud? Yeah, Family Feud's just smut. Oh, come on, Mr. Mime, what are you doing? No, I can't. I can't have Pikachu with the whites around his eyes. That's just not. every day we get further from God. who knows? It could be fun. It could be fun if they know what they're doing.
God has evolved into Detective Pikachu.
Oh no. He was here all along. Man. Ben, what you got for us? I see two stories. I didn't mean to turn into Foghorn Leghorn. I see.
I just have two small ones. One is that Sunset Overdrive is going to be released for the PC. In fact, you can pre-order it on Amazon right now. This is not a plug for the game necessarily, but it's going to be available. It's going to be released on November 16th, so this Friday. But I thought that was kind of interesting because I'm semi-interested in playing it, and I do not have an Xbox, so this can solve that problem.
That was a big one.
What was that game shtick? I remember you could like customize your characters pretty much however you wanted.
Uh, the what I'm interested in by it is made by the same people who made Spider-Man, and they like quoted like learning some lessons about how to do like open world traverser from this game and applied it to Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was like hyper colorful, hyper stylistic open world that's all about like flying around and stuff.
Yeah, so this is Insomniac, so it feels very inspired by Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that, I mean, this honestly, like, this is the Fortnite ethos before Fortnite existed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people are interested in that, that is an option if you don't have an Xbox. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is they announced a release date for Crackdown 3 that I guess like the third or fourth release date they've announced. Mm-hmm. But this one is February 15th, 2009. So 3 months from now. And it's going to be released on PC and Microsoft. And they showed some gameplay from a multiplayer version that they had,
mm-hmm.
which just kind of like focused on like heavily destructible multiplayer, where it's like you can shoot the platform that somebody's walking on and have it like blow up as they're walking on it.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow. It's coming to PC. That's great.
Yeah.
Hopefully my system will run it.
Two games that are no longer necessarily just Microsoft exclusives.
Good. Do you think one of those delays came after they put out that one trailer that had Terry Crews and everybody was like, oh, this game has Terry Crews in it. And like, oh, we just hired him for the trailer. Shit, we need to put Terry Crews in our fucking video game, don't we? Like, yeah, you kind of do. So,
yeah, in reading the article, it mentioned how like the initial release date for the game was back in like 2016. So yeah. It's had a lot of delays.
But... yeah. Huh. Well, the original Crackdown was a lot of fun. Maybe this one will be too. And that sounds like a section to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I decided to challenge everybody to get a little creative and write a newspaper dating ad for your favorite video game character.
Let's see here. We didn't get a lot of responses because of a weird little hiccup on Facebook. Apparently not everybody could see this or respond to the post. So this is going to be a little bit shorter of a section.
Only the true believers could see it.
Well, I mean, I don't want to leave anybody out. Our exclusion isn't our thing. I mean, if somebody's a shithead and, you know, doesn't believe in respecting people, then yeah. But yeah. Okay. I'll start us out here with Mike, who says, single night male. Sorry. And that didn't make sense until I said it out loud. That's very good. Okay. A single night male seeks companion for long walks through Darkroot Garden by day and dancing and dining in Ulaseel Township by night. Must love dogs. No Abysses, please.
Well played.
Yeah. Knight Artorias.
Woohoo!
Yeah, very good. Abyssies sounds like a horrible slur.
Right.
Hey, Jala, the image for this is a dating ad placed by Kermit, Kermit, yes, at Muppets.com, which I am in the process of emailing right now. Where did you find this?
Oh, I don't know where I came up with the idea originally, but I got the idea last week. And I was just like Googling for, you know, like newspaper dating ads. And I was scrolling through a bunch of them trying to find something that looked fun. And so I saw this one and it was great. So now that we've talked about it, we have to actually read what it says.
Okay.
So swamp frog seeking hip, fashion forward swine for long term relationship must be fun, flirty, speak French and know karate, must be flexible enough to mix it up. Like to have twins someday. If you are my match, let's talk. Kermit at Muppets.com.
Oh no, I just thought about what the offspring of Kermit and Miss Piggy would look like.
Oh no.
No.
All the girls are cute pigs and all the frogs are, or all the boys are cute frogs.
Okay.
But yeah. You know how this works?
Yeah. That's how it works in Muppet land. So okay. Don't worry. Oof. They're not nightmare monstrosities.
Yeah. That's swerved out of the way of that nightmare.
I always took the Kermit and Piggy relationship to a very dark place of Kermit not being at all interested, but being too nice to ever truly turn her away. Did I read that wrong? Am I the only one whose childhood kind of had that image of it?
He's very submissive in the relationship.
Yeah. He definitely seemed indifferent to her quite a bit.
Yeah.
But like, I just had that feeling, and I'm sorry, I hate to judge Kermit like this, but I had that feeling if the right pair of long green legs walked through the door, he'd be gone in a second.
I think Kermit's married to his job is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that it's an act of malice. I just think that he's it's like Liz Lemon, right? He's too busy holding everybody else together to take care of himself. Yeah. Which is funny because Liz Lemon is explicitly Kermit the Frog. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, "Call me John. Single male, recently separated from a very codependent relationship, seeks a fun, friendly partner who enjoys warthog drives and extreme base jumping. This sounds like you. Join my squad and help me change my Spartan existence. We can be legendary together."
Excellent.
That is great.
Yeah. Referring to Master Chief, if that was not obvious. Some people might not know.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Like, when was the last Halo game people played?
10 years ago.
Maybe.
Since before they stopped numbering them?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Dennis, what does Jack say?
"Young black wizard seeks platonic life coach for short-term mentoring arrangement. Only recently left grandpa's house, so financial independence is of utmost importance. Must like yellow eyes, blue robes, and pintie hats." Hats?
Pinty hits.
Pinty hits.
Yes.
"That. Wants to stand out among many identical peers. Let's make our memories part of the sky."
I want to see if anybody else knows this.
A black mage from Final Fantasy, right?
Yeah. Which one?
Vivi.
Yep, there we go. Cool.
Hey!
I'm sorry I underestimated you.
I always make a bad choice of renaming all my Final Fantasy characters, so I never know their like base names. But that one's gotten through.
Oh, yeah. Vivi's great. Yeah. Jella, what does Steven say?
Steven says, "Polyamory vault dweller seeks adventurous wastelander. Can look however you want. Hates rads and giant crabs."
Must not have crabs.
Always got to be upfront with that. Yeah. No crabs, please.
Oh man, the raddest scorpions is the thing. Sam says, "Mega man down to mega party." Short and sweet.
I loved it.
Says saving money on the ad so you can spend it on the date. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to absorb your powers. That doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it? I guess he would have to kill her first.
Let me show you my Mega Man is not that great either.
Yeah. Huh. So, Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, "Come and visit Gavlin's, where Gavlin wheel and Gavlin deal. Gavlin only wants soul marry many soul. What you want, he has it down at Loathsome Gavlin's Emporium."
I need to go back to the last week and see if it was Lindsay who brought up Gavlin that time as well.
I don't remember who brought it up, but yeah.
Gavlin wheel, because we are in a Gavlin roll. I love how his personal ad is just an ad for his store. Oh,
another person married to their job but very aware of it.
Let's see. And then Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
"I sound like Batman. I quip like an 80s action hero. I'm augmented like RoboCop and have a face like the Lawnmower Man, ready to engage in your espionage needs. Oh, and my initials are a messianic illusion."
Yeah, J.C. Denton. Yeah, very good.
"I've also inspired many medical advances."
different guy. J.C. Denton versus Adam Jensen.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't mean to correct you. Kind of makes me sound like a dick.
Huh. No, you're good. Okay. I got to get my J.C.'s from my A.J.'s all sorted out here.
Yeah. I haven't written mine out, so I'm just going to try and do mine off the top of my head. Single white male, Recently left long-term relationship, looking for non-smoker who likes long rides in a canoe across foggy lakes and doesn't mind nightmares.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Why a non-smoker?
Because Mary died of a disease that involved coughing. So it was presumed to be like a lung cancer kind of deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
At least that's the way that I read it. It was a bit of a reach.
Did her like negaversion, was she constantly smoking?
I forget. You know what? That's a detail that I don't know.
I want to say she was.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain that she was.
There's an ending where as you're leaving Silent Hill with her, she starts coughing as well, implying that the cycle begins again. But
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's good. That's good for Off the Dome.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
All right. Seeking single male, preferably alone in a dark alley. Interested in a very short-term but intimate relationship. Must not be camera shy. Please leave your crowbar hang-ups at the door.
Are you a head crab?
No.
I was getting like Dishonored vibes, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
This is from Manhunt back in the PlayStation days.
Ooh, oh okay. Man, that's cool. I don't have familiarity. Yeah.
Deep cut.
Dennis.
Yeah, so I know the game. I just don't know what exact character to affix it to. But so, you know, looking for someone to join me on my story and see how many different paths we can take together. I'm incredibly loyal, so no matter what you choose eventually, though, our fate is already determined.
Are you Lee from The Walking Dead?
There you go, yes.
Okay. and Jala.
Strong man seeking stronger goddess, wears his heart on his sleeve, and is a true companion to the end and beyond. Accomplished world-renowned hero with a steady high-end job as premier of the Magic Guild of Vayne. Plays the lute. Do you sing? Let's make beautiful music together.
You are hero from...
Not hero.
No? Shit. Okay.
Galleon.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. From Lunar.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Which, coincidentally, I'm going to be on a podcast tomorrow for PlayStation Power about Lunar 2. I've already talked about Lunar 1, so they're asking me back for Lunar 2.
I was going to say, I remember you doing a Lunar podcast.
Yeah, I'm doing it again.
Yeah, I went with... I knew you liked Lunar Eternal Blue more than Silver Star Story, so I...
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. I took a wild swing at Eternal Blue.
Yeah, well, actually, I like Galleon better in Eternal Blue more so than in the first game. However, most people don't know the second game as well. Most people only play the first one if they played it.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a fun, creative diversion there. Thank you, Jala, for putting that up. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast and watch for... the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons if Facebook decides to show it to you and if Facebook decides to let you respond. Sorry, guys.
And I'm sure a lot of people's imaginations are going who didn't previously see the question.
Yeah.
And so totally post now. Those.
Yeah.
Post those for sure.
won't get on air necessarily, but it will make us very, very happy.
Yeah. Impress your friends.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I'm going to go with you first.
Okay, so I realized that it's been so long since I was on here that you guys didn't know that I finished playing the rest of Heroes of the Monkey Tavern. But I did, and it's a dungeon crawl. And you fight a dragon at the end and there's treasure and then you go back to the tavern. The end. Like it's not like you know, story of the century or anything, but that was the thing that happened. It was a good game. It was a dungeon crawler. There were no surprises. It was very dungeony.
Yeah.
So that is all I have to say about that. If you like a dungeon crawler, that is a good game to play.
Yeah. So. That's the one that kind of looks a little bit like it plays like Grimrock.
Yeah, it plays like sort of like Grimrock.
Yes.
So, yeah, so that's the thing.
Nice.
And also, then I also got Dark Souls Remastered when that came out, because I said I was gonna, and I've been playing it on my Switch. So I'm playing a sorcerer again, because that's what I was when I originally played it on Steam. And I played around in Undead Burg, and I just kind of like stopped before the first actual boss. I just got really, really busy and then real stressed. And so I switched to a different game from there. So I haven't gotten back to that, just because like I've been very busy, because with the holidays, like one of my jobs is I substitute for people at Camp Gladiator for trainers who cannot make it. Now with the holidays and with travel and people being out of school and people coming into town, like I've been working like a full, like two jobs full time on top of all the other things that I do with myself. So I could not devote myself to the level of stress that that would bring to me. So I set that down for a little while, and I played something else very like stress-free, Semispheres. So this is a game that I talked about having attended PAX South a couple of years ago and seen it there. It's basically a meditative puzzle game that was developed by Vivid Helix that won a bunch of awards, and it was on sale on Switch recently. It's also available on Steam, Vita, and PS4. Mm-hmm. It's single player, but it's split screen, and you control two different spheres, one that's blue and one that's orange, by using the thumbsticks on your Switch. And you navigate them through different puzzles, which require teamwork. And yeah, of course, some of this involves portals. So there are some stealth-inspired elements, like noisemakers to distract guard lights, and teleporting and side-swapping to complete different portions that the other sphere can't due to its positioning. So like it does have some interesting elements like that. And I just dropped a link to an image of what this game looks like in the Slack for you guys to see. Mm-hmm. The puzzles are grouped into circles. So like, you know, all the different stages that you go through are grouped into circles on this big map. And when you complete each circle, a multi-panel wordless comic appears to tell you the story of a boy and his robot. And the music is actually markedly good ambient stuff. It was composed by Sid Barnhorn, who also did the music in Antichamber, The Stanley Parable, and Out There. And there are apparently over 50 levels, and I'd say I'm about a third to a half done with it at this point. So I've been having fun with it, just because it has some new elements to a puzzle game that I haven't really seen very often. Like I said, with the side switching and some of the other elements, and then you're controlling the two of them individually. There are times where if you use a noisemaker to distract one of the guards on the opposite side of the screen, then you have to like move that, you know, that particular sphere, you know, around where the guard is and everything. So there's certain parts that have a timing element to them as well. So, but it's very fun. I've been enjoying it.
It's a pretty game. I don't know how I feel about the idea of like the story just being incidental comic panels that you find unrelated to the play.
But here's the thing. It's a puzzle game.
Right, right.
Do you really need like a story about the spheres?
Why is there a story at all?
I don't know why there's a story at all. Maybe I'll find out. Maybe I'll find out that these are the robot's eyes. I don't know.
Okay.
These could be part of the interior design of the robot. I haven't gotten that far yet.
You're in real defensive.
I love the idea that this is like some remote, you know, subconscious process in the robot's brain. You know, this is what you are playing is the signal that keeps the robot's heart beating. And like if that were ever to shut, like there's no conscious control of it. It never comes to mind. But if it shuts off, then you die.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not getting real defensive, but I mean, like, I don't know. Like I haven't gotten to the end of the game. There could be a reason, or it could just be like a poor design choice. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's a
Rorschach test, you know, the levels already kind of look like Rorschach tests.
Yeah. So
it's like a good use for the Switch though, since it's the two thumbsticks and you kind of want to look close at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's a good game to like pick up and put down when you just need to like unwind a little bit and listen to something ambient, you know, some ambient music and just like chill a little bit. So I've been playing that for a little bit. So are there any questions about that game before I move on?
No. No,
okay,
I mean,
cool. The first two games that I already talked about, I already had previously discussed when I played them before. So the other game that I've played recently, I'm actually pretty excited about, and it, depending upon how it finishes, it might be one of those games that I recommend that you play on Hexcrank. Cool. Mm. So it is called Goetia, which is, it's a horror adventure game that was developed by Sushi and published by Square.
Okay.
And you play as the ghost of a young woman. You wake up in a graveyard with no idea what happened to you. You remember that you fell, and then when you look around, you realize you don't feel anything, and then you see your headstone, and then you start to realize, oh crap, I died. And then you go to your house to find your parents and your sister, but then the house is in disrepair with a bunch of wards sealing parts of it off, and you don't know what's going on and why you can't pass through.
Yeah.
This stuff is on the Steam page, so it's not a spoiler. 40 years have passed since Abigail, the girl that you are playing's death, and so her parents have passed away, and the sister got married and had kids in the interim, and you're still looking for your sister throughout the rest of the game, having, you know, found out that your parents are dead. And your main quest is trying to figure out what happened to your family, why you woke up from the dead, you know, like why is the town next to your house, you know, your manor abandoned, all of that stuff. So your family was devoted to researching Goetia, and here's where my nerd hat comes on. So now, you know, here comes my like lecture about what the hell Goetia is.
It's a demon, right?
It is a practice that involves summoning demons.
Okay.
Specifically, those summoned by King Solomon of the Bible, who managed to get many demons to work for him. And the name comes from a 17th century grimoire or a spell book, to use, layman terms, on demonology that was compiled of material that was a few hundred years older. And that was called the Lesser Key of Solomon. The first section of the Lesser Key of Solomon is called the Ars Goetia. Now, the Ars Goetia was revised later on and published in 1904 by Aleister Crowley as the Goetia, but it's not like a faithful rendition of the original. And Crowley, it basically refers to the act of demon evocation as a form of like psychological self-exploration or something.
Hmm.
So, it's evolved. Like Goetia itself has evolved over time, is I suppose the main point of that.
Right.
Now, as a side note, Persona and Shin Megami Tensei fans would enjoy skimming the list of the 72 demons given in the Ars Goetia, because many of those demons crop up in those games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to look at the names and like maybe the pictures or the descriptions of them, it would just be fun. You can just pull that up on Wikipedia. Basically, each of the demons also has a sigil in the Ars Goetia, and those seals appear to be correct in this game as well. So I don't study demonology exactly. I'm familiar that it exists in the world, but it's not like, you know, something that I'm fascinated by particularly. So, but I did pull up some of the sigils and compare them, and they seem to be correct. So that is actually pretty cool.
Nice.
And the first demon that you encounter is called Malphus. And in the Lesser Key of Solomon, it's described as a crow that can take human shape and is a president who giveth good familiars, builds houses and high towers and brings knowledge of enemies, desires, and thoughts. He has a hoarse voice, but will receive sacrifices kindly and commands 40 legions of spirits. And the illustration of him is really kind of hilarious because it's a bird with a bricking trowel. So I just linked it so you can see what he looks like.
Yeah,
because it's kind of awesome. And so yeah.
Oh, so Malphus, not Malthus, like the guy who wrote about overpopulation.
No, okay. Malphus.
Yeah.
So in the game, he's a giant crow that has a sense of humor, and he's been trapped in the manor by your sister, who deceived him when she summoned him. And so this is what he looks like in the game right here and how he talks to you when you see him. So
this is like a side-scrolling adventure game. Like, are you controlling that orb that flies around?
Yes, orb is Abigail.
Okay.
So yeah, there's other demons that you can come across that you can unlock throughout the rest of it. I say that, but like I've unlocked several of the different sections that with the sigils of some of these other demons, but then I haven't seen any other demons. I haven't seen any other demons so far, and I would say I'm about 2/3 through the game, maybe a little bit more than that, 3/4 through the game at this point. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen any other demons, just Malphus. But I don't know if they're coming or what the deal is. But anyway, the music in this game is actually pretty notable as well. It slips in and out of being ambient and then also prog rocky.
I'm interested.
Yeah, it's kind of cool stuff. Like I actually find myself, because usually on these kinds of adventure games, especially when it's late at night, I'll turn the music down. But on this one in Semispheres, I've been turning up the music so that I can hear it rather than keeping it low, because I actually enjoy the sound. So yeah. In the game, you have some abilities. You can move through walls, of course, open doors, push buttons, and possess certain objects to move them around. You gain additional abilities as you progress through the game if you can unlock them. It's unnecessary to finishing the game. You can finish the game without ever unlocking special abilities. Hmm. However, you can solve, some basically side puzzles to get some extra abilities to make the game's puzzle solving a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And I unlocked a couple. There's actually one. I unlocked one that allows me to possess and move around heavier objects than initially. But also I unlocked another one that allows me to see portals to a demon dimension. And I've come across a few of them, but I haven't actually gone in there because it looks like a big black hole. And I'm kind of like,
well, that's where all the demons are.
I kind of don't want to go in there. So I haven't gone in there yet. So I don't actually know what's inside the demon portals at this point.
Is that where the prog rock is too?
Yeah, yes. But no, it's in different places throughout the game. But anyway, you end up eventually going into the ruins of Oak Marsh, which is that town that I mentioned that's near to your house, your manor. And then Eldritch Village or Eldritch Forest, which is on the other side of the manor. And I've had some really interesting experiences wandering around so far. I've solved several of the different puzzles in most of the different areas, but I'm also exploring so I can see all the different parts that I have access to, except for the demon dimensions, which I'm kind of saving for when I get basically I kind of want to save it for when I get stumped, But one of the areas that I came across, which is, something that I think comes up later in the game, is that one of your nephews dabbled in entering photographs. So one of the areas you enter is called the Silver Labyrinth, and it's photos within photos. So you enter into a photo, and then you're in the world of that photograph. And then if there is a photo on the wall in the photograph, you can enter that and then go into, wheels within wheels, it's pretty neat.
It sounds like something from another game, but I don't want to directly call out because that's kind of a spoiler thing. I'll put it in the text channel, but
I'm really enjoying the mood to it and the mystery. Like there's some psychological horror going on as well as you uncover what's happened to your family and how you came back as a ghost, because I found out how I came back. I don't know why yet, but it's still pretty traumatic when you find out what happened, little bits of what happened. And then Abigail, the girl that you are playing the ghost of, there's a lot of points where she's like, I wish I could have a reflection again, or I wish I could feel anything. There's wind and it seems like it's probably cold, but I don't feel anything. And this whole place, my house, this home that she lived in, she just woke up and it's all decayed and everything is moved around. There's different stuff everywhere. There's some familiar objects, but then a lot of it's just wrecked. And then she finds out that all the people that she loves are dead or missing, it's pretty tough. And it actually, the game does very successfully make me feel bad for her, makes me, empathize with her.
Yeah.
So
for some reason, I'm getting Evanescence lyrics here.
right. But, yeah, so Yeah, there's also the demon summoning in a ghost town that you're trying to sort out and figure out what happened. And there's like a lot of different storylines going on at once, actually, that you get to be privy to as you go. So I'm looking forward to more. I'm looking forward to seeing the resolution of the game as a whole once I get that far. I've been really enjoying it. And like I said, like if it ends in a good way, it might be one of those times when I act as like the pre-screening for Hexcrank and go, hey, Cole, play this game. It's really good.
Yeah. So. Now, weirdly enough, this seems to have come like from a similar place or as a result of a similar initiative to Black the Fall, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just Square branching out into indie games that are visually impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any peril in the game?
Peril? No, not that like I've seen. I haven't come across a point unless they just like throw it out.
Black
there.
Hole demons might be perilous.
Yeah, I know. Like that might be like the place where I might die. But so far, no, I have not had a point where I have been like, oh God, Abigail's existence is going to be gone soon or something. Yeah. Like I haven't had that kind of an instance so far. But again, like I'm trying to free a demon that has been bound in the house. There's some wild cards of people I don't know where they are, what their motives are, and, you know, like other such things. And I don't know about any of the other demons that I have been unsealing. So I don't know if they're going to show up or what. Like, I don't know. And then, of course, then there's those black holes that I don't know what's on the other side. So,
Visually, and some of the subject matter, specifically going to a an abandoned place and figuring out what happened. Did you ever play Spider? The Secret of Bryce Manor, Jala?
No, I don't even know what or where or when.
It's an iPhone game where you play as a spider who is working his way through a mansion. And it was kind of an early iPhone game, but I believe that it's still available. It is a very neat game, a very beautiful game. And I get the same vibes, like looking at the videos and screenshots of this. So
cool.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing. You guys have any questions about that?
No, I think for science, you need to go through those black holes the next time you play and report back.
I do. I will when I get that far. But like, you know, I've been just like poking around, trying to figure out all the puzzles and things. And the thing about the puzzles, and I'll mention this now, just in case you do decide to play this, Cole or anybody listening, is you really have to kind of pay attention to what objects are around that you can possess and just note where they are. You don't actually need to possess every object that you come across, but you need to remember what and where, because you will need to, you'll be like, oh crap, there was this thing, you know, this item that I needed and I don't remember where in the mansion it is. And then you've got to wander from room to room unless you remember where everything is. So I would almost recommend that you take a notebook and write it down, because there have been some times that I'm like, I don't remember where that is.
Yeah.
I've got to figure it out. And sometimes I'll just like Google it and figure, you know, like, at, you know, try to find where it is just on Google just to pull it up, because I don't want to roam the entire house looking.
Yeah. I like the idea, like just the idea of another game doing object possession, because I've not played a game other than Ghost Trick.
What's that? Ghost Trick was.
Oh, no, yeah, never mind. You're right.
Yeah.
I thought it was Phoenix Wright game for some reason, but that's not correct.
It's the same guy. Like just
it's the same guy who made it. So you're not off base too much there.
No. But like Ghost Trick and then basically nothing else. Like I know there's that GameCube game that nobody played called Geist. Where you haunt.
What about Beyond Two Souls, Cole? How quickly we forget Willem Dafoe.
That's and motivated.
Ellen Page's masterpiece.
motivated. A lack of recollection. Oh, man.
Yeah, well, Ghost Trick played out very differently than this game, and the vibe of Ghost Trick is very different.
Yeah.
Both of them are very enjoyable, but they're vastly different games for sure. Yeah. So. Yeah, but they do have that element in common for sure. Yeah. It's not as much timing based in this game. It's not like I haven't come across any puzzles that require timing or, you know, stuff like that the way that Ghost Trick would.
Right.
So this one's a little bit more, I hesitate to say casual. I guess like less pressed, like, you know, less you know,
demands less dexterity.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, because I don't really want to say it's more casual, because it's actually a pretty engrossing game.
Yeah.
As you're reading through, and like, okay, real talk, I very often get bored reading all the little letters and shit that people drop into games like this. But mm-hmm. in this game, I'm actually interested in reading all the extra stuff that they give me. It's kind of like a gamble as to whether or not I will actually be interested to read it most of the time. But in this game, I have sat and read every single piece of whatever, you know, correspondence or a piece of a book or whatever that they've dropped for this. So yeah.
Nice. So yeah. Goetia.
I said Goetia, but I don't know. It might be Goetia. I don't know.
Yeah. Nice.
Tomato, tomato. Goetia, Goetia. Yeah. Ah, there's a demon.
Every time.
It was the second one.
Cool. And that's everything off of your list.
Yes, it is.
All right. Dennis, you were not here last time, so I'm going to throw it to you.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump right back in. Guys, I have jumped into the hottest new open world game. That's right.
No Man's Sky.
I've started playing Mad Max.
Oh, okay.
Hey! That game is sweet.
Yeah, it's been... I tell you what, it is rare for me to play a game and be impressed by like the technical side of it. That just, you know, it's computers are so powerful now, it's hard to do something that's like, wow, that's really impressive. But the first time I got into a road war, I don't know what you call it, like a fight in my car, playing Mad Max. And kind of, you know, you're driving from point A to point B. Suddenly you're surrounded by these like crazy war dogs in their spiky cars that are trying to run you off the road. And you stop paying attention to where you are driving. And you're focused on just trying to like maneuver, knock them off the road, kind of ram them and all that stuff. The amount of ground that I covered in that fight, like I wound up on the complete other side of the map from where I had started. Panting with like virtually no health left, destroying the final guy at the last moment. And it just amazed me how wide ranging the vehicle combat is. Like, you know, it is the open world in this game is truly massive because it is meant to be driven through in a car at top speed. And the fact that you can just casually have a fight that spans, I mean, that was probably a solid, I don't know, 10 miles, 5 miles of Earth, just as a you know, a random event in between missions was mind blowing to me. Now the consequence of that is
you're
is
really far away from where you wanted to be.
Well, there's that, but you know, you're in a car and you can drive back. So that's not the worst. The other consequence of it is that the land, at least to this point for me, does feel a little bit empty. It is meant to be kind of gone point to point in the car, and it's not the kind of like Grand Theft Auto experience where each doorway, each little alley, each rock has something interesting under it. I think that's okay because it's a freaking Mad Max game. You're driving through a wasteland.
Yeah, I mean, so if you expected anything different, it'd be, yeah.
Yeah, in any other game, or maybe I should say in any other theming, I would be complaining about there being sparse content in the world, or for that, having things far apart, but this fits so perfectly that I forgive it. And that it what it detracts to from, and maybe like a play density, it gains back in thematic resonance.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I can't even fault it for that.
I feel like it also does a good job of making the desert look like varied in different parts of the map.
Yeah. Well, and this is the incredible thing. So I feel like I've covered so much. Like the area I'm in is so freaking big. And I have unlocked maybe 15% of the map. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely incredible how big this game is. And in a square mileage kind of aspect, I would be really interested to see how this map sizes up against other maps.
Yeah.
So that just from a wow factor, I think the game has me. And I very much appreciate that, especially the vehicle combat feels very on point. And when you're kind of doing it all heading in one direction, it really does feel like it's portrayed in the movies. So that is full credit to the game for that.
I remember. So cast your mind back 5 years and 6 months or so when this was announced at the 2013 E3, and they just showed like a small, like it was like a teaser trailer, right? You know, we see the wasteland and we see the boot step down and we see the cars drive by. I remember how skeptical we were that this would be anything. Like this was before Fury Road was like the best thing.
did it predate Fury Road?
So both of those came out in 2015, but that trailer was definitely pre Fury Road. Like I didn't expect Fury Road to be anything, you know. I was like, oh, that's weird for them to be bringing that back, but like
beating that dead horse. Everyone was completely wrong on that.
But it's like the turnaround from complete indifference to skepticism all the way to like two of the people on the podcast have played this game and enjoyed it, you know, to varying degrees, to this year when they announce Rage 2 and say, yeah, this team is doing Rage 2. Like, wait a minute, they're beating that dead horse again? Oh, right. That team can probably nail this.
the importance of a director, the importance of a dev team. I would say very clearly the team making this had a good vision and knew what they were doing on the vehicle front. Now, I will pull back a little bit and say I've found the hand-to-hand combat so far to be very underwhelming. Mm. I mean, it's a straight pull of Assassin's Creed / Batman / literally every game now.
Right.
Square to hit until you see a triangle, and then you hit triangle to respond to that. You get enough combo meter up, and you get into a special mode, and there's, you know, various special things you can do.
Right.
So Warner Brothers game. So I'm pretty sure they just give them the engine and say like, here's what you're doing for fighting.
Here's the lines of code. Just go.
Yeah.
I completely believe that. The problem is, at least to this point, the combat has never been with a group large enough to feel like that combat system really, really works. Like when I love Assassin's Creed, when I love Batman, I'm juggling a group of like 10 enemies around me at once. And so far in the game, I've never had more than 4 up against me at a time.
Yeah.
So it makes combat short-lived. It makes the stakes never feel that high. And in general, when you're on foot, things are pretty pokey so far. That is with a large so far, because as I mentioned, you know, I've revealed 15% of the map. Yeah. I would not be surprised at all if I'm only 15% of the way through the game. And so I reserve the right to change that opinion as we go.
I'm sorry. You're gonna need to file for a waiver on opinions.
Everyone will be raging and sending emails before they get to that part of my evaluation. The other thing that this game does incredibly right is the character design. Just the not that the models are particularly impressive, but just the concept behind each of the characters is very, very Mad Max.
Are you talking about like the Raiders having different themed armor and stuff, or are you talking about like individual?
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, each area has kind of a local war chief, for lack of a better term, but kind of a head honcho in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've all got names like Jeet and Scrotus and stuff like that.
Scrotus is a lie.
Scrotus is the main bad guy.
Oh, okay.
Which they also reference a Morton Joe. And was a Morton Joe a thing in the previous games?
In the movies? Not as far as I recall.
Yes, in the previous movies. Yeah, I think he was a special for Fury Road.
Yeah. George Miller consulted on the game quite a bit, so I wouldn't be surprised if he... And like they were supposed to come out concurrently, but the game came out slightly afterwards.
Yeah, and this game is definitely not a like remake of the movie or intended to follow the plot of the movie at all. It's in the same area. You know, there's Gas Town, there's the Bullet Farm, and then there's Scrotus is like, I think, the son of a Morton Joe or something like that.
I'm going to need you to stop saying Scrotus.
It's a name, David. I can say whatever I want.
Cole trembles too much when he hears the name Scrotus.
You don't know what he did to my family.
But so, you know, every time you roll up into a new camp or go to meet a new character, there is that kind of George Miller-ness to it, or that, you know, very Mad Max-esque delight in figuring out who they are and seeing what their thing is. And, you know, they've all got crazy piercings or wearing like masks made from people's faces, and it's all very metal. in the most kind of juvenile and gleeful way possible.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been fun. And I like, for an open world game, the amount of time I've spent reading character bios is kind of crazy.
Nice.
That, you know, they don't really lay all the little details out on the table about the character. So you kind of look them up in the menu, like, oh, this guy like has psychotic outbursts that he curbs through self, whatever, you know, like it's craziness. And horribly dark stuff, I'm realizing, if you evaluate it on any terms except for within the game world.
Right.
But that's Mad Max for you. So I've been enjoying that. I also have been fighting my impulse to just need to 100% everything. And I'm having flashbacks to Saints Row 3, where I was like, oh yeah, this game is fun. You know, it's like a slap happy GTA. I don't think I'll play it that much longer. And then I went on to literally 100% that game. I'm kind of sensing that for Mad Max. So
you will, come on. I really, we know. The game is good
in the long run. Yeah. So that's the first one I've been playing, and the big new one that I've been playing is Mad Max.
Yay.
Any questions, cool, or Ben, any commentary now that you've had some time to reflect on that game? How far did you get in it? Did you finish
it? So I'm pretty sure I 100% of that game as well. Like, cause after the main story, there's like regions and stuff, and kind of like Saints Row, there's a bunch of like, finish all the things in these regions if you want. And so I think I put in 84 hours. And so I'm pretty sure I 100% of that. Yep. It's sweet. Yeah. I really like that game.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any other questions.
That's Mad Max. The other game that I've been continuing to sink time into is Atlas Reactor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you guys remember, this is the turn-based character kind of team fighter. I don't want to call it a MOBA because there's no creeps, and it doesn't have a lot of things that most MOBAs have. But in terms of like the character pool, all with different powers that you form teams with and then kind of battle each other, it's in that vein. And when we talked last, we knew that Trion Worlds, I think it's Trion, had been sold. That's the developer of the game. And the fate of Atlas Reactor was uncertain, especially given that it kind of has fallen in the shadow of bigger games from that developer. And I'm very pleased to say that it seems, for all intents and purposes, like Gamigo will continue the ongoing support of Atlas Reactor. So that's a huge like, yay!
Yeah.
Yay!
Because I super duper adore this game.
Nice.
It scratches a strategic itch that gets at the best kind of getting in your opponent's head parts of Overwatch and MOBAs without any of the twitchy execution, you know, mad aiming skills that are required for those games, which is the sweet spot that I kind of need to be competitive. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
You can, you know, on the plus side of that is you can never blame anything on lag. You've got 20 seconds to plan your turn, which is more than enough time if you have any kind of idea of what you want to do.
Yeah.
And then everything plays out in front of your eyes once it's locked in.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool to see. And there's a lot of interesting magic behind the scenes happening to show the turns playing out, so that you kind of have to even if someone dies in the game, they still get their attack off for that round. So you're going to, you know, once you survive to a given round, you're going to be able to do your next attack or your next thing, no matter what, even if you get killed. And so the computer, after everyone locks in their move, is deciding which attacks to show first to get the best, like most natural sequence of events. So that, you know, if someone's going to get killed that turn, they need to shoot before they're killed so that it doesn't look weird. Or if someone does an attack with knockback, the person that's getting knocked back needs to make their attack before they get, you know, knocked around for whatever reason, etc. But it does sometimes just lead to things where the computer can't smooth it out and there's too much going on. And then you'll have a character kind of attack, get killed, then attack, and then just kind of burst into flames and disappear for no good reason. I've been impressed. I'd seen a lot of people saying like, oh, dead game, queue times are really long, that's no good. And I have found that to be not true at all for the non-ranked PvP mode. So just kind of the vanilla game, I've never waited more than a couple minutes to get in. Very, very much on par with League of Legends or really any other game that I've played. So that's great.
Yeah.
The problem, however, is I've unlocked now ranked mode, by which I mean I saw fit to spend, I think it was $15 to unlock every character in the game.
Okay.
Which for a character based game, like that's huge. That's cheap.
Yeah.
You know, a League of Legends, you're spending $3 per character, and there's like 127 characters.
Right.
So
right. That's
it's their, absolutely nuts.
Yeah. That's their meal ticket.
Yeah, so I mean that, you know, $15 was great, you know, and it allowed me to jump. Kind of did that. Did I think you have to play 50 games in unranked before you're allowed into ranked? And the first ranked game, it was awesome. I queued for like 30 seconds and got right in, perfect, oh, nice. Sweet. And then the next game, I queued for 20 minutes before I had to go, and then I came back and queued for another 30 minutes before I had to go. And you know, I'm queuing in and then starting up another game, basically either in another window on my computer, or I've got the PS4 right next to me, so I'm playing that while I'm waiting. But I'm starting to get really worried that if you want to play this game, you can only really do that right now in the non-ranked queue. And that queue seems to be doing just fine, but like I'm a bit worried for the health of the game if for ranked you're routinely waiting 20 minutes plus.
Yeah, you're gonna hit a ceiling where you're going to like outstrip your ability to find good matches quickly.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I'm doing my placement matches, right? And I won my first one, so I don't know what that does to my MMR, you know, whatever you want to call it, that's determining who I should be matched against.
Your measles, mumps, and rubella, what does that have to do with anything?
My matchmaking ranking.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm going to get measles, mumps, and rubella waiting here. That's very frustrating. So I'm hopeful, especially, you know, as they've announced, like, hey, yes, we're keeping the game. I think I've seen on the Atlas Reactor Discord that they have hired back most of the team.
Oh, good. You know,
which is great, because there is a lot of guff around the way that they handled it, and rightly so, because they just kind of laid waste, which, I mean, I understand, like, if you can't afford to keep people around, you can't afford to keep people around, and that's a really shitty situation. But, you know, there was no heads up or anything like that. So it sounds like a lot of people got their jobs back, which is cause for celebration.
Mm-hmm.
The community that I've found around the game so far is ridiculously passionate. That's great.
Yeah.
Just need to have enough people playing ranked to not be waiting. Because usually I've got 20 minutes to play, period, not 20 minutes to wait in queue.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that's a little bit troubling. Everything else about the game, and certainly as I've started exploring all the different characters I now have access to, is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had fun, you know, once I unlocked the characters, I had the game up on the TV where like Luke and Milo could watch. And I just said, all right, guys, you know, I queued as Phil and then got dropped in and saw, okay, I'm support, I'm a frontline character, I'm a, you know, firepower character, whatever. And I was like, okay, here's the list of character guys. You pick the one you want to see play. And they would, I like that one, be the dog, be the this, be the that. And, you know, mostly they went for the characters that are animals.
Right.
There's a dog,
right.
There's a triceratops, stuff like that, you know.
If you have a choice between being a dude and an animal, like, come on.
Yeah, no brainer. And I think I've done pretty well with the character, with the animal characters, funny enough. But that's been enjoyable. And the game is cartoony enough that I, you know, I feel fine playing it with the kids.
Yeah.
Which, as we've talked before, that can be hard to find. So. Yeah, that's Atlas Reactor. I'm enjoying it. I hope that this is a game that gains traction behind the new kind of ownership and support, and that I'll be able to enjoy for a long time to come. And if not, hey, it was $15 to explore a really cool and unique concept.
Yeah. So the rhythm of the play makes it sound like it's an interesting pair with the game you talked about last time. Now what is that?
Frozen Synapse.
Yeah, Frozen Synapse. There we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. It is very much the same base theory of you plan your turns simultaneously and then you act simultaneously. However, you cannot, you know, impact things once you're in the acting phase. You're just watching it play out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I got a question. Is there a way for you to stream this, or is there a way for me to watch it on Steam? Because I've wanted to see the game, but I haven't been able to.
Oh yeah, I'm happy to stream it.
Okay.
And I'm comfortable enough with the game now to not feel like I'll be a complete fool. I think generally those games, it's like I spend so much time just figuring out like the whole roster characters and everything like that. But yeah, I'm happy to stream it at some point if you're interested in watching.
Yeah, for sure.
do an instructional stream, because God knows I don't know if anyone else is streaming it.
Yeah.
It's such a gem. Like, it's so, so unique and different than anything else out there. And I want it to succeed so bad. So maybe I do need to be out there streaming it and pumping those numbers or whatever.
Preaching the good word.
Yeah. Preaching the good word.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, your excitement about it as a parent.
Yeah.
It comes through.
Yeah. And if anyone is interested in trying it, you've got a ready and willing partner to check it out with.
Nice.
Just get at me.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, those are really the two games I've been playing.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I also have two games that I've been playing, maybe three. I've been playing Rocket League. We'll talk about that. I've continued playing Left 4 Dead 2, and that's been fun. I played with Dennis a little bit last night. But yeah, that's kind of taking the place. Now it's like, instead of doing all Rocket League, it's kind of like do a campaign of Left 4 Dead and then do some more Rocket League.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's like a fun, you know, casual multiplayer game to hang out with friends and do.
I almost like don't think of that as a game. I don't know why. It was just like a chance to hang out with friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been playing that as well.
We talked about that at the Watch Out for Fireballs live show. Like, Gary plays that game quite a bit, but it is almost always like a socialize and hang out kind of thing as opposed to actually engaging with the game.
Yeah.
I know why I don't think about it as a game. It's because both the missions we've done, I've died and they've decided to leave me there while they went ahead. That's right. I
remember those the last 30 seconds of the game. Come on. Everyone, we said we were going to run. Someone threw a Molotov between me and Dennis. I couldn't get to him. Choices had to be made.
Yeah, and who threw that Molotov, Ben?
I didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't get to you. There's a fire now.
All he knows is that it was thrown.
Yep.
Yes.
Nobody's to blame. But the actual like new game that I've been playing, I've continued playing Red Dead Redemption. I'm still like on chapter 4, I think, out of 6 chapters. So I'm still only like 2/3 of the way through the game. I'm planning on finishing the game, but it is like becoming more of a kind of a chore to complete the missions. Like the missions are fun. But I will say that I had more fun exploring parts of the map on my own and just seeing like what the different areas were.
Yeah.
Than like actually going through and doing like the procedural missions. Like some of the missions are definitely stand out above others. Like in general, like the mission quality is pretty good, but at the same time, like, I would say 1 in every 3 is something where it's like, oh, I'm going to teach you how to get your hair cut or, like, wear a suit or something like that. Something that you might have already done just in exploring the environment on your own. So it gets a little bit tedious. There are some cool, fun interactions that you can have in, like, the open world. Like, for example, last night when I was playing around with it, I stumbled upon an area that I recognized from a treasure map that I had found. And it was also happened to be an area where there was like a legendary like animal to hunt. So these were like a lot of like really cool kind of side in-game things that you could kind of do. So like that experience was fun. But then like, yeah, as I said, like some of the missions before were just like not as interesting, especially if like the main part of the mission is it's like you go to a place that might be an interesting environment, but then we're going to give you this like 5-minute scene where you're just shooting like a bunch of people who are running in. Like, and that's like starting to wear a little bit thin where it's like, it's very unrealistic the number of times that you shoot up like a town full of people where it's like, I've killed half the population of this town at least. Mm. Like, but then I come back, you know, in game 2 days later and like everything's fine, you know?
But
and
you never took them down below replacement level, so.
Yeah, exactly. And in the old days, they were repopulating very quickly, apparently.
Right, they had lots of kids. It was fine. They just expected. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that's like especially disappointing because one of the points that they touted was like, oh, you know, kids will grow up and remember if you killed their dad.
Oh,
you
they
know?
Pull it's, that Fable shit on you?
Yeah, that's not the case, you know, like, or at least I don't think it's the case. So that's like a little bit disappointing. I do want to see the end of the game, so I do want to like keep going through and doing that. But also like the story like hasn't gotten this like the stakes just aren't exactly there yet. There's like some developments with like the latest chapter of where you go, but it's just I don't know, it's not as engaging. So I get the way I've kind of thought about it in my mind now is thinking of the game on a scale between Grand Theft Auto 4 and Grand Theft Auto 5, it's like at a Grand Theft Auto 4.33, where it's like It feels like a lot of the gameplay is kind of going for, even though I said that you can shoot up half the town, it's going for like trying to put you in a realistic environment where, for example, your horse can run into a tree very easily and you fall off or something like that.
Yeah.
But like the mechanics aren't exactly like fun. Like robbing a train doesn't feel fun in this game.
Oh, jeez.
It feels like a...
That is impossible.
It feels like a struggle against the controls to try and do it correctly. And then it's a disappointment afterwards when it's like when your bounty outweighs the amount of money that you've taken from people. So that's like the one kind of disappointing part of it. Again, it's a game I respect a whole bunch, though. It's like such a massive game, and there's like a lot of like surprise interactions that are really cool that are like just programmed in. One example is I saw a post on Reddit today of somebody carrying someone on the back of their horse, setting them down in a swamp next to an alligator, having the alligator start to run for that person to try and eat them. The person uncut their ropes or whatever, and then the guy, the hostage or whatever, got up and just started fighting the alligator and kicked him to death. And it's like, oh, well, that's great that you know, that the game can accommodate like that type of interaction, you know. And it is cool. Like myself, like there's been times where like I've hogtied people up, and like there will be conversations of like, what are you doing? And like if I'm taking them towards a waterfall, they like know what I'm doing, you know, or they'll like react towards it, you know. So that's like impressive, and I do like that aspect of it. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's just, I don't know, it seems like it's just not clicking, or it's just kind of misfiring. Like, so I think maybe with one more iteration, if they do like another Red Dead, maybe they'll do something with the transition that they did from like Grand Theft Auto 4 to Grand Theft Auto 5, where kind of focus more on like the fun gameplay mechanics.
I think what you described versus the idea of like, oh, I'll remember that you shot up my dad is a very important difference. Like one is in the moment and the other is permanent. And I feel like everyone focuses on the permanent, right? They're going to remember what you did in the past and then they'll comment on it. And that just seems so hard to do well. Mm-hmm. Just because a lot of people have talked about it and no one's done it. However, the idea of people commenting on the right stuff in the moment feels like it goes a lot longer or a lot, you know, goes a lot further towards helping immersion or things feeling real. Mm-hmm. Because it's in the moment, you know, so you're kind of lost in that moment. And yeah, 5 minutes later, maybe they don't remember you or whatever, but creating that moment is the important thing. And I wonder if it's almost like focusing, you know, drawing a difference between memory dialogue and reaction dialogue, or, you know, pick the right terms to describe it. That's important.
And it's one of the things where it's like, they could have designed the game in a way so that to prevent you from doing like things like shooting up an entire town. Cause there's one section of the map where, without spoiling what it is, there's like a city where you can't pull out your gun. And there's a couple places like this actually in the game, but it's only like two of like maybe 10 civilized areas that you run into.
Yeah.
So they could have designed it in a way to, you know, like even make it more realistic, I guess. But I don't know. But still,
you can't, or you may not.
You can't. There's two places where you just literally can't pull out guns. I'm fine with that.
It's in the city where every inhabitant is a child, and every building is made out of children, and the streets are paved with children.
Mm-hmm. The last part was really hard to get through, but yeah, they did it. I'm not against realism, but it's like if it's at the expense of like fun gameplay mechanics and just doing it because it's realistic, then that's like a little bit questionable, I guess, for me.
Yeah.
I don't know, like some of the missions are fine. Like there's like some of the, there you can do bounty hunts and like some of those are fun. Some of them like give you, like, for example, this was I guess this is a mild spoiler of the game, so not of the story or anything, but there is one bounty mission where you go, and up to this point every bounty mission you've done, you've had to like track down people who are like in the middle of killing someone or something like that, where it's like obviously guilty, right? And you go to somebody and he's there with his family, he's like, can you please give me a minute to say goodbye to my family before you tie me up? And you have the option of accepting that or declining that. And like there's like, that was like a really, that was fun. And like, that was a really interesting choice, and it was like immersive. So like that like is a part of the game that like is fine. And that like shines. I
mean, you let him say goodbye to his family, right?
I did not.
Oh.
I immediately lassoed that person.
Yeah. I would have been interesting if he used that as an opportunity to make a break for it.
Yeah.
That's what you were afraid of, you monster.
And up until this point, like, everyone had been heartless murderers. It's like, all right, if you have a $25 bounty on you, you can't be a good person. So I don't know. I don't know how to improve the game, I guess. I'm not really doing a good job of like describing why it's falling a little bit flat for me, because obviously like some parts of it are good. So it's very much like a mixed bag. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely an impressive game. And if you like open world games, it's worth checking out, but, I don't know. It's on the fun scale. It's just not clicking for me, I guess.
Yeah.
It feels similar to what Breath of the Wild was for me too, where it's like, that's a game I respect a whole bunch, but I just felt very bored playing it.
Yeah, it just didn't end up clicking for you.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, I mean, like, what you're describing, you know, just the point, like, the point specifically in the main campaign or the main story where the missions just get really unwieldy, like that, that's something that happens in a lot of Rockstar games. There's definitely, like, a toward the end of the second act wall where they're throwing just... like blah stuff at you compared to like the what they show you early on. Like the most Rockstar games, they thrive in the first act, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I get that, like, the design of most of the missions are, it's teaching you something about how to interact with the game, and like, to the credit of the missions, most of them are unique, or most of them bring a unique aspect to you or teach you like a unique mechanic of the game. But, like, I don't like the fact that, like, you're very much pigeonholed where you want to go. Because, like, the world is beautiful. Like, exploring the entire map is great. Like, the environments are, like, surprisingly varied. I thought it was all going to be kind of, like, uniform-type Montana country, because that's kind of, like, the area you start out in the game. Mm-hmm. But, like, every corner of the map is completely different from the other. And it's, like, and very pretty. All of them are, like, very gorgeous, especially at, like, the right time of day. Like, it can just look so picturesque. The disappointment is if you go to a corner that you're not supposed to be in, there's nothing to do there. And like, you can't interact with even like small things. Like, you can't go to a gun store and like clean your gun or buy a new gun or something like that. Like, those areas are more like locked down. So I wish it took more from like the Fallout type design, where it's like, go explore like this map. We'll have things like random things happen, and there are random encounters, but it's not like, there's not like missions that you can randomly stumble upon, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I wish it cribbed more from the Fallout type game design than it does the Rockstar game design.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hmm. So I don't know. Lukewarm opinions. It's, you know, there's good parts, but then there's parts that are a little bit disappointing. But...
Yeah.
Hmm.
Huh.
In preemptive talks for Game of the Year or whatever, I would say God of War I enjoyed much more than Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
If that, just because that is like a very tightly tailored game and is like high quality all the way through, you know?
Yeah. I need to go back and look at stuff that's come out this year because I have just lost track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, you know, there's Red Dead Redemption, Mad Max, obviously, we're talking about. Horizon Zero Dawn, I can think of, Spider-Man. I feel like that genre of games is winding down a little bit in favor of the God of War style, kind of more focused narrative.
I think they're both can be good, but definitely the quality seems to be better in like the Uncharted games and the God of War games for me. Yeah, I enjoy those.
The new God of War is like it's a little bit of a Goldilocks between them, right? Like, it has a focused narrative, but it is open. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. No, you're not wrong. I would not describe it as an open world game. I would describe it as like an Uncharted game that you can go to any part of the mission in, I guess, or like any part of the map in.
An open corridor game. I mean, Dark Souls is that way a little bit.
Yeah, I would say that too. Dark Souls has that. Has that working? Yeah, is that all, Ben?
That's all I got.
Yeah. So I'm gonna disappoint people. I've played like a little bit of some stuff. Like, I played a little bit more Call of Cthulhu, but I don't have enough of like a unified theory about it or like a solidified opinion. Like, I just haven't seen enough of it to comment really.
But you can You can
no, don't worry. I'm building up to it, okay, Jella. Don't worry.
Okay.
Just please. the other thing, I started up playing Spider-Man a little bit because I just wanted some candy.
Sweet.
And that game was described to me as candy. And yeah, like the opening stuff is really cool. I was playing it and then I hit like the portion where I'm like walking around the lab doing circuit puzzles and I'm like,
yeah,
what in the world? Maybe this is fun. I want to swing.
See, I was exact opposite. I was like, this is the best part of the game. I love these circuit puzzles.
they're fine, but yeah, it just wasn't what I was there for. So that's what made me stop for the night. Cause I was like, okay. I think I had something I was that was starting when I stopped. However, the game that I have played is a game that I streamed over this past weekend. It's one that Jala has talked about on here before, The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is an FMV adventure mystery game where you are playing as a psychiatrist interviewing the patients of Dr. Decker, who has been murdered violently in his office. Jala's talked about this and done kind of the rundown on the basics. So I apologize if I'm covering ground, but people may not remember the specifics. The trick is that Dr. Decker had a belief in psychokinesis, the ability to affect reality with mind, and may have instilled in his patients a belief that they have superpowers. So over the course of like five sessions, you are interviewing these patients and trying to figure out who could have killed him, which patients have the motivation, and also trying to determine if what they say is happening to them is real or if it's just a delusion that they're having as a result of psychosis or any number of things, or are they pretending to, you know, so on. There's a lot of like a mysterious element to this. This game is really, really cool. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Good.
It's good.
Yeah. It has like a little, so it has a bit of a Her Story vibe. And Jala, I know you said that you found this much more engaging than Her Story, which I can understand. Specifically from like a subject matter point of view, people are doing crazy time loop tricks on you. but what I found most engaging is, you know, you have like the prompts that it tells you that you can put in, you know, like, oh, how are you doing today? What did you think of Dr. Decker, etc. And you can also type in your own responses and it looks for the keywords in that can get you stuff that may be off the beaten path, which is kind of the trick to getting them to say everything that they were going to say. So like when I type something in and it ended up being like the right guess at, you know, at something that they hinted at and it opened up another line of conversation, that was immensely satisfying. And it was immensely satisfying to a degree where it offset kind of the feeling of jankiness when it plays the, I have no idea what you're talking about, dialogue when you just type something or ask them a question that the game didn't anticipate.
Yep.
Yeah. The performances were we're entertaining. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they are uniformly good, but like, no. Like some of these patients, their abilities and such have like cool stories associated with them. And they are varying levels of sympathetic and varying levels of, upsetting. So in going back and reading about it, and I don't think that this is necessarily too much of a spoiler, I was under the impression that the identity of the killer was determined by your actions. Like, oh, like depending on how you play it, that changes the ending. Turns out, it's actually rolled up at the beginning each time you play. So what is actually determined by your actions is the sanity meter. And when you were describing your endings that you got, Jala, how things really go off the rails and start kind of going nuts compared to my relatively grounded ending. That's a result of like sanity meters. So how much you,
dick around with everybody and tell them that, yeah, they totally have those powers.
Yeah.
I wasn't 100%. Like Mai told me her ending and she'd gotten two endings, one of which was pretty well grounded. And the other one was like really like worse than mine. So I think she probably got like top tier insanity.
Yeah.
But mine felt like it was the canon ending, because at the end of mine, they said, they kind of recapped and said, ah, oh, damn, the infectious madness of Dr. Decker. And mm-hmm. so I was like, okay, that must be the canon ending that I just got.
But they do really cool stuff like messing with your perception and instilling a lot of doubt as to who you are and, you know, exactly what your relationship with your patients is. It's just like, it's a really, really neat game. I like it. I like it more than Contradiction, which I also enjoyed quite a bit. And I'm really looking forward to playing the other game that this studio just put out. I need to look and see what the Madness of Dr. Decker. Sorry, I need to look this up because otherwise it's going to mess me up. My search was not there. They just put out another game that is like a supernatural mystery FMV kind of thing. The studio nailed it. Yep. So good. Any questions? Jolly, you watched some of this. How did you like my approach?
I was like, you picked the boring ass path, dude. Like the whole time I was like, he's literally like trying to be like a therapist, except that one time you told that lady to kill that guy.
Oh, kill is very much in so quotes anyway. For that.
Yes, people can watch the stream and find out all of that. But anyway.
Everybody was very put off by how quickly I jumped to that option for her.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But anyway, yeah, like I was very busy letting the world burn because it seemed very interesting to me to do so, but you were just like trying to be straight laced and whatever, but it was very fun to watch you try to puzzle out who did it
mm-hmm.
and putting all the pieces together to figure out who it was. My curiosity is piqued by the whole thing that you say that it's determined at the beginning, because if that is the case, then does that mean that all of your clues are the same time to time, or do those change? Does that mean that there's like different, different things that play out that way depending upon who it is, or is it all just the same stuff and then just like a gamble for you? Because it seemed like a lot of your hints were the same as my hints, but my killer wasn't the same as your killer. So that's what I was like, I really kind of wonder.
They didn't really start hinting strongly until the very last chapter, when it started really coming down that the person who was my killer was the killer, like your assistant Jaya, like she comes in and says, oh, we have, here's a bunch of evidence related to one of these patients. And from there, like it seemed so certain that that's who it was, that I was starting to second guess that it was a false lead, that it was a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, because like who did the killing is not necessarily the most interesting of the mysteries going on here.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the framing device and the motivation. And even that is called into question. It's really cool. The other game, thank you, Ben, for putting this in. You could have just cut in and said, oh, it's absolutely this, instead of alley-ooping to me. No, it is the shape-shifting detective is what they called it. So I'm curious about that. Yeah, good FMV games. What a strange idea. Cool. And that's everything. Any other questions about the infectious madness of Dr. Decker?
It's abbreviated TIMOOD or ODD on their website.
TIMOD. Like,
even when the acronym is hard to pronounce, that's a
TIMOOD. Cool. Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. And thanks to the assembled crew here for hopping on. It's been a good deal of fun. No real special admin for you this time, other than to enjoy yourselves and bundle up if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. But you know the usual stuff, Patreon and Facebook and ratings and reviews, and telling your friends. And most of all, just come back next time. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. I have been Cole Ross. You can find me, you can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can watch my streams on Twitch at GreenLaser73.
I'm Jellichon in places.
I'm Ben Merkley, and you can watch my streams on twitch.com/Merkley. twitch.tv/Merkley.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles for me?
I have a few.
Okay.
Surprise, Dennis.
Okay.
Nightmare Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Pet It and Forget It. And The Streets Are Paved with Children.
I also have The Streets Are Paved with Children. Dennis?
I have two. I have Single Night Mail. And then I Did Ask for This.
I Did Ask for This.
Did in all caps.
Okay. Ben?
All right. I also had Surprise Dennis. None of this goes into the show. And then I have That Sounds Like Sex to Me.
What's that? I don't remember that.
That entertains me.
I think that was because you
cut out in the middle of saying section or something, segment, and I was like, that's not what I heard, Cole.
Yeah.
Ben, I think both of those might have been in like an interstitial section of the
that could be true.
Yeah. Oh. So the two that have multiple votes are The Streets Are Paved with Children and Surprise Dennis.
Streets Are Paved with Children entertains me more. Sorry, Dennis. Like, no offense.
Yeah.
No, totally fine.
Okay. Yep. So sure. That will be it. Cool.
Excellent.
Well, I'm going to go and go to bed because I am tired.
I'm going to eat. I'm hungry.
Okay.
Good luck with the cat acquiring.
Yeah, I will.
If
I get a kitty, I will post lots of pictures. I'll become a monster. So
you shall become a monster just like me and my wonderful bird pictures everywhere.
Yeah.
Get some cat selfies. I want to see you in the picture with a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like based on the photos from the shelter, this looks like a shoulder cat. So that might be that might be a thing. Yeah.
I'm going to have to swing by the pipe store as well then.
What do you mean by the pipe store?
You got to get a pipe. You got to get some coat with like patches on it. If you have a cat resting on your shoulder like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, fingers crossed.
All right.
Take care, everybody.